Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we help you create a better life through complete connection to yourself, to others, and the world around you. Today we're going to be talking about how money reflects emotional value. We've been talking a lot more lately about how the stages apply to your personal life, to your love life, to your work life, and of course now to your money, your relationship with money. And this is not a get-rich how-to, although you'll notice a bit of a trend in the concepts there, and of course in everything that I preach about getting debt-free and building wealth from there for whatever you might want to do with it. But we're going to be talking about understanding how it reflects your emotional value, your relationship with that money, and what that can tell you about yourself. And then you can make decisions on whether or not you want to change that. So that's what we'll be talking about today. Before we get started, quick shout out to new listeners in Mumbai, India. Is Samband Kriya Dhanyavad. Thank you for this connection. We're so excited to have you on board. If you have questions, thoughts, ideas, click the link in the show notes. Let me know how I can help. So your money and your emotional values. Money reflects the value that we inherently place on things at a personal level. This is not a new idea. So for example, a diamond is really just a pretty rock, but we pay enormous sums for them. Why? Because of the emotional and the symbolic value that they have in our relationships. That all-important ring represents commitment, future wealth, social status, and a number of other things. Think about how publicly we flaunt and discuss a beautiful engagement ring or a wedding ring. I mean, admit it, you want that big rock, don't you? Why? Why? Because it makes us feel worthy. It makes us feel important. It makes us feel. And we would pay anything to feel the way that we want to feel. So, some questions for you. What objects do you own that make you feel a certain way? That make you feel something? I would argue that most of the things that you bother to keep around make you feel something. So let's examine that. List out each thing that you own. Jewelry, pieces, vehicles, maybe a house or even an apartment that you're renting. Things on your shelves. Clothes in your closet. Cash, even, as an object. Dishes in the kitchen. If you consider each of these things, it's worth it to ask yourself how this object makes you feel. And why do we bother with that? Why do I care how that object makes you feel? Because how that object makes you feel is why you're keeping it around. Right? We don't tend to keep around objects that make us feel bad unless we subconsciously believe we deserve some kind of punishment. And that's possible. If so, examine that too. What are you keeping around? How does it make you feel? And can you spot any patterns there? Do you tend to keep around objects that make you feel safe or free or worthy or loved? What's the pattern there? And what else might make you feel that way? For example, other than objects, are there activities that make you feel that way? Are there people that make you feel that way? Are there experiences that make you feel that way? See, similarly, we overvalue the things that we already own. And you may have heard of this idea before. Like when you list something of yours for sale, maybe you want to sell a piece of furniture that you have, or a house, or a car, or a bicycle, or whatever. You will tend to overvalue it. It's called the endowment effect. That's a term coined by Richard Thayer. And Richard Thayer is considered to be the first to really deeply explore that idea of the endowment effect, the value that we place on an object that we already have, just because we already have it. And why do we do that, right? It makes us feel a certain way, right? So we're valuing not just the object, we're valuing, in my own opinion, what it makes us feel, right? That feeling has value above and beyond the object. And I think that may be one reason, in my own opinion, why we overvalue what we already have. So Richard Thayer suggests that to have something and then to not have it because you sold it or gave it away feels like loss, and loss is painful. And we as humans will do just about anything to avoid feeling loss. So that's his thought on why we overvalue what we already have. So he would say we overvalue the object to soothe that sense of loss, to make up for it. When you sell something and you ask yourself what it's worth, you're really asking yourself what it will take to make the loss of this thing feel okay. What's it going to take for you to be willing to give it up? Now, for someone on the other end of this transaction, they're going from not having it to having it, which is a position of gain. So they're asking themselves, what are they willing to pay to feel the triumph of gain? And the answer is not nearly as much as you need to assuage the pain of the loss, right? Because what one person is willing to pay to gain and feel triumph is not nearly as much as they'd be willing to pay to avoid loss. Unless, of course, they attach emotional value to the thing. Because we won't pay big bucks for something that is just a thing. But we will pay anything for love, freedom, security, or worthiness. But it's not all about loss. It's about the ownership of the thing. You chose this thing. When you bought it, you made a choice. And another thing that we humans always seem to want is validation for our choices. So you crave validation for that choice you made when you bought it. You want to be right in having chosen to pay for that. And if nobody wants it, if it has lesser value, then maybe you were wrong to have chosen it. I mean, ouch, being wrong really hurts too. Having your preferences called out as lesser feels like social rejection. And deep in our subconscious, social rejection equals death, because long, long ago, 20 to 40,000 years ago, it did. social rejection often did mean death. These days it doesn't, but our subconscious doesn't know any better. These objects represent ourselves. They represent our history. They represent our growth. They can represent a dozen other things. And to undervalue the thing is to undervalue ourselves and our time here on this earth. I mean, you had no idea there was so much involved in how you value an object. So we're compelled to overprice it just because we want to be worthy and we want others to validate our worthiness. So here's some more questions. Consider the objects that you were thinking about before, when you were thinking about how these objects make you feel, and the other things, the activities and the people and the experiences that might also make you feel that way. So think back again to those objects. What do those things represent to you? What do they represent about you? So that object makes you feel a certain way. It gives you a feeling, but it also represents something to you. It could be an experience that you had. It could be some aspect of yourself that it seems to represent. It could represent something that you want in your future. It represents something to you or about you. So what does that thing represent? And this is where you need some brutal honesty. Because the next question is, who are you without these things? Without that object, if it just poof, disappeared into nothingness, who are you without that thing? And I think you know the answer to that when you're just, you're you, right? You having that thing, not having that thing, doesn't change inherently who you are. See, placing too much emphasis on the objects that we own can lead to buying as an addiction as we seek meaning and worthiness in our lives. Buying to soothe yourself is nothing new. They call it retail therapy, and we laugh about it and we encourage it. Buying something new makes you feel temporarily alive, temporarily valued, temporarily appreciated, maybe temporarily rich. But this temporary escape from your current reality, it soon wears off and it leaves you feeling just as empty as before, if not more. Because now you no longer have that money that you used to buy it. So there's a sense of loss there too. And this isn't to say that we shouldn't have things or buy things that we enjoy. It's this, the problem comes when we place too much emphasis on the objects. We imbue them with too much meaning, too much representation, too much feeling that we rely on them for. That's when the problem comes. Now, the credit card industry was built around your need to soothe yourself with things. And it's all too common. According to the Federal Reserve, the average U.S. household had over $8,000 in credit card debt as of June 2019. And that accounts for over $1 trillion in credit card debt across the country. $1 trillion. Now that's how desperate we are to feel safe, to feel loved, to feel worthy, to feel prosperous, to feel whatever we are desperate to feel, that we will put ourselves as a collective in $1 trillion worth of credit card debt, or on average, $8,000 per person. That means for some of us, it's much, 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 much higher. And for some, it's lower or zero. So some more questions to examine your emotional relationship to money right now. What are you wanting to buy lately, these days? What recently? What are you craving to buy? And in buying that thing, what are you escaping? What emotion are you seeking to acquire? What do you think this thing will make you feel? And why do you not feel that already? Whatever feeling you want this thing to give you, why do you not have that right now? And this is a legitimate question. You may truly be lacking a certain feeling, and you need to find out why. Are you trying to feel alive or valued, appreciated, prosperous? Why don't you feel that right now? And what could you do to feel that way that you want to feel without derailing your finances? Is there some other way to get that feeling that doesn't include buying a thing? Now, as with most challenges, the cure for financial self-sabotage is connection. Financial self-sabotage involves yourself and your money. So the key is to focus on those connections, your connection to yourself and your connection to your money. Now, after considering the questions above, take some time to explore the cycle of human development that I'm always going on about. See which stage you're spending the most time in. And do the exercises to move yourself forward towards a more complete connection to yourself and to your money. And all of those are detailed in the book, Purna Asati, in all of the other writings at the website. Follow the links there. It's also detailed in the roadmap and in the email course, which is all free for you to use at lastingpeace.org. So check all of that out. If you take a little time to improve your connection to yourself and your connection to your money, and you just take a few minutes to dive into what it is you want to feel that you think this purchase is going to make you feel, and why you don't feel that right now, and how else could you feel that? Because I'm not telling you to not satisfy the desire for that feeling. But maybe you could achieve that feeling by some other means. Or maybe not, right? But it pays to spend a little time digging to the root of the real answer for that. So every time you want a thing, ask yourself, how would that make me feel? And why am I not feeling that right now? And how could I feel that right now? Is there a way? And maybe the only way is, yeah, that thing, that will do it. Okay. But at least you did it with your eyes open. You did it honestly. And hopefully you didn't go into debt to make it happen. If you want some advice on getting out of debt, take a look at Dave Ramsey and his website, daveramsey.com. I am a huge advocate and follower of Dave Ramsey's. Methods are so simple and easy, step by step. He's got these baby steps, and you follow them, and it works, and I am living proof that it works. Listening to his podcast and to his radio show are a great way to keep yourself on track while you're getting out of debt. We also talk about that in stage 3. It's part of the homework for stage 3. So check all of that out and see what that would make you feel like as well. All right, send me your thoughts and ideas and let me know how I can help. And if you have a question, there's a really good chance that lots and lots of people around the world have the exact same question. So let me know how we can help each other. Thanks for joining me this time. I'll see you next time. And as always, I'm wishing you, Purna Asati, complete connection.